Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins me. We're going to be talking about firewall technology, OpenSense. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 361, recorded November 3rd, 2015. OpenSense. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. And by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work without the right payments API. That's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEdge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day, not aware of it, projects you maybe want to try out right after this show. Joining me this week was my co-host, Gareth Greenaway. Gareth, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
And thanks at the last second. We had a lot of discussion about who was going to co-host this week. Thank you for jumping in there finally. It was getting a little slim on the pickings, so I'm glad you took busy time out of your busy schedule for scale and took on today's show.
No worries. I got a nice little surprise as I woke up this morning. Hey, you're hosting the show.
Well, it wasn't clear to me. A lot of mail went back and forth, but I didn't have any ideas. So where are you speaking to us from? You're probably your secret bunker in Thousand Oaks or something?
I am in my secret scale bunker, deep underground, reviewing proposals for scale at the moment.
Nice, nice. Well, I know what one of them is. I definitely know which one in there. There's one in there for me, actually. So I know that I got it in just at the last second. So that's very cool. And I am speaking to you and to all of our audience here from beautiful downtown Santa Monica again, where the sun is even higher in the window now. So hopefully it's not too distracting over my shoulder there. If you're just watching, if you're just listening to the audio, you might not appreciate that, but that's the way it works. Okay. Anyway, so the show is not about us. The show is about projects. This week's project, no exception. The project is, scroll. OpenSense, OpenSense, and it's a fork of PFSense. We did the show on PFSense for Floss 101. I mean, we're up to like 361 now, so that was like long ago, December 24th, 2009. And what I can remember from that show, given that this is a fork of that, is it's a firewall. It's a mechanism that keeps you safe and secure, and it's based on FreeBSD, which is my favorite operating system, and it did a lot of really cool things. So what do you know about this so far, Gareth?
Just exactly what you said. I mean, it's okay. It's an open source firewall appliance. They've taken a lot of the kind of open source firewall technology and packaged it up, made it really friendly for people to use.
Put a nice GUI on it, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I use a lot of these tools already on my FreeBSD server. But it's really nice to have some sort of GUI for it so I don't have to think about things. I'm pretty good at the command line, though, so it's really not too bad for me. I forgot to mention we're actually bringing on. I got to find his name. I'm going to mispronounce this. Shelovis. I think it's pretty close. And he's one of the three project leaders for this thing. So we'd spend all day talking back and forth about what we think this is, but we probably should have Joss come on and tell us a lot more than we already know about. But before we do that, I have a very important message. Because whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I myself is a DigitalOcean customer. Found out about them actually back at Scale back in February last year. Well, this year, I guess it still is. And I have a free BSD server. It worked really well, and it just it's painless. I actually came up in 55 seconds, just like they promised. DigitalOcean is built for developers. It's used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. A one-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. Automatic backups and snapshots let you easily clone, deploy, and resize droplets as you grow. Full-featured DNS management to easily manage your domains or use dedicated IPs. It has an extremely active community with a large, dedicated set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. You want to deploy Docker, set up a mail server, they got you covered. And it's easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. I have verified that personally. DigitalOcean is incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. We're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. We really appreciate DigitalOcean's sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Josh Chalavis. Welcome to the show. Did I get it close?
Hi, Randall. Yeah, you're very close. Absolutely. It's okay, a difficult name in English.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's like trying to get someone to do Schwartz right, which is almost as difficult sometimes. Where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in the Netherlands at our office in Middle Harness, which is close to Rotterdam, a port of Rotterdam.
Oh, very cool. I've been to Amsterdam. I've been up the Rhine River that goes through Amsterdam?
Yes.
Yeah, so I've been up the Rhine on a small river cruise. That was a lot of fun. So, yes. So, anyway, why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view? What is OpenSense? What does it solve? And how did it come about?
Well, it's first of all, it is a firewall. It's a security platform as we see it. It's much more than it was in 2009, I think. It developed quite a lot. Okay. We do not only try to prevent getting bad people getting in your network, but also try to protect your network from things getting out. So we have intrusion detection in it as well. And besides that, we have things like traffic shaping, captive portal, a lot of features that you can use for optimizing your network for stable network performance. OpenSense is it's an open source project, as the name already says. It's open, and it's a BSD license, two clause license project, which we find very important. That's one of the reasons why we forked the project.
Well, how did it come about? I mean, why did you fork PFSense?
I think there are quite a number of reasons why we forked. In 2011, our competitor bought the PFSense brand. And at that time, we thought it would be fine to work together and to get the project moving as we did before. But we found out that there are different motivations behind the project. We wanted it to have an open source license. And when the tools were removed from the internet and the license changed, we found it the right time to fork the project and to keep it alive as it was before. But also, from a technical standpoint, we found a lot of issues with the software in the years before that we wanted to change. And that never happened. And we found other people who thought the same, like Franco, who's one of the core developers. And we started working not only on the fork, but also on improving the software that was already there, and include new things like an MVC framework and port code to the new GUI that we thought would be necessary for our product to stand out.
Is this the kind of thing that everybody needs, or is this what kind of people would be wanting to look for something like this, a firewall setup?
Well, eventually, it's something everybody can use. If it's for your home to protect your own network with your wireless network in it, or just in a corporate environment, a small business, large business, there are so many things you can do with it. It's also has corporate features in it, like you have in Cisco and Palo Alto. So you have failover protection, you have traffic shaping. So many things are in there that you can use to enhance your network experience. So it's eventually it's not just for your local network. It also protects, or you can also use it to, let's say, how do I say that? If you look at traffic shaping, you are able to have your wireless network give a guest network a different performance, different bandwidth than your own network, for instance. And that are things that we can do with OpenSense as well. So it's for essentially for everyone, I think.
Okay. And one of the things I saw on there was captive portal. Is that the kind of thing like I'd find at Starbucks when I want to log into their Wi-Fi, but I have to provide some sort of authentication first?
Yes, you will find it at Starbucks. You will find it at the hotel. You will find it at the camping. You get a page that you can log in. You can use a voucher code to get access to the network and get internet connectivity. So that's basically what it does. And we made it very easy to use. And the next release is for 16.1 is January. It will be much enhanced as well. The experience will be much better than we have with the current version.
And so how technical do I have to be to even take advantage of this? Is this something where I can just immediately go to like a help screen and start pulling down on things and sliding things? Or I mean, where, do I need to know like everything you just talked about to be able to use this?
No. You can use it right away. It's a plug and play. You just install it on a computer or buy a ready appliance with it installed. And It basically figures it out itself. It has a LAN and a WAN interface. You can just put up your rules in there. Very intuitive. You want to block certain traffic, you just type in the IP address and the address that you want to block, for instance. It's if you want to use it in a more advanced scenario, like having the traffic shaping or captive portal or things like CARP setup, then it becomes more complex. You should know a little bit about what you're doing to get that working. But there is built-in help for all the features. We have built-in help that you can enable per item or all at once so that you can see them all in line.
And since this is based on FreeBSD, do I have to have a system dedicated to running FreeBSD to actually take advantage of all this software?
You need FreeBSD. You can install it from our installer. Then you get a specialized version of FreeBSD with our kernel, some patches that we made with it. But you can also install it on a standard version of FreeBSD and then upgrade to our kernel base. So you can install it on DigitalOcean as well if you want to do that. Just install a standard version of FreeBSD 10.1 and then put it on top of that.
Is this something that's in ports then?
No, it's not in ports. We have our own repository set up for that. So you just change the repository to our repository, then install the OpenSense package, and it takes care of all the dependencies that are in there. And you can. It also can take care of the kernel upgrade that you need to do if you want to use all the features, because you can run it with the standard kernel, but there are a few features like the traffic shaper that need patches. Not much anymore, because we are trying to migrate all those features to standard FreeBSD. We don't like all those patches. We don't like customizations on the base OS.
Yeah, well, you definitely want to push everything upstream that you can, because then it's simple for you guys too, right?
Yes, and that's important to get it to make it not only to make it simpler for us to work on the project and to keep it manageable, but also if you want to use OpenSense in an environment that's not specially designed for it, but you want to use it on a cloud server or on something you designed yourself and just put it next to that appliance or application that you have built, then it's important that you don't need all those customizations that are in there. And also, if you want to use it together with other applications or write plugins, or it should be standardized. And for us, it's important to get new features in. Don't have that much work cut out. Otherwise, we need to constantly keep up with all the changes that happen within FreeBSD. And now we can keep all those changes, or most of the changes, in user land, and that's easier.
So most of, if not all of OpenSense is open source. Is that correct?
All of it is open source. It's 100% open source. Absolutely, yes.
And there's also a, you and your partners have a, there's a company that's behind the open source or the OpenSense project. How do those two fit together?
Well, the company that's behind OpenSense is Deciso. We have been selling a lot of open source appliances and also worked with a lot of open source projects. We have sponsored open source projects in the past, just like pfSense, but also Monowall. And I think the nice thing about it is that since we know about open source, care about open source, we try to figure out a way to do business and still keep the importance of the open source project and the community alive. Because for us, it's also important for the development of the project that everybody uses it, even if they don't pay anything for it. And that helps growing the software itself as well. It's impossible. Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's impossible in a world where everything moves that fast for a small company like ours to have the feedback and the community involvement without open source. If we wouldn't do it with open source, we would have to fight our way into a marketplace that's already occupied by lots of commercial companies. And we wouldn't add any value to it, I think, at least from my point of view. I think open source is great, and it's a way of thinking, sharing knowledge.
Exactly. How is the community, the OpenSense community, is it, as far as like contributions to the project, is it mostly the kind of core team, or are there other community members that are contributing code to the project that don't work for the commercial entity behind OpenSense?
Yeah, the project itself, it's not only funded by the CISO, it's also funded by other companies like OSNet, Collexium, Secudos, and now I'm going to forget some, I guess. That's not nice. But there are many others behind the scenes that are investing into the project and are also in some way competitors to the CISO brand. And do find it important, just as important as we do it, that the project moves ahead and is a viable alternative to commercial solutions. And some of those people are helping. They help with translations, with wiki, with the forum, moderation, and things like that. But also one of the core developers, one of the most important core developers that you will see if you look at our project is Franco Fichtner, and he is not related to our company at all. I think that in itself shows how important that we find it to have a viable community project. We are not in it for business. We are in it for the open source project. And to keep it viable, we need business as the project needs to be funded. That's for sure.
That's good. That's very refreshing for a lot of companies that are behind open source software. So if someone was interested in contributing to OpenSense as a project, if they were using it and they found a bug, or if they wanted to add a feature, what's the process for someone contributing?
Well, the project is very, very approachable, and there are many people already working on it. You can go to different sources. If you have an issue or a problem, you can just try the forum, which is an easy and a very accessible form of putting your questions in. If you go to the forum at forum.opensense.org, just register there and put in your question on the right place, or create a new topic. The other way to do it, if you know it's a technical problem, it's a bug in the software, then you can create an issue at GitHub. All the sources are at GitHub, and if you go to the core part of OpenSense, it's github.com/opensense/core, and then you can just create an issue there, put in what you think that the problem is, and we can take a look at it. So that's also a very easy way to do it, and that's also the way to do it to get enhancements into the project. So if you want new features in, you can either use the forum, you can also use the GitHub for that as well, or if you're rather speak to someone at our project directly, you can also email us at our project account.
I presume that also means you have commercial support contracts too, so that if I was a large company and counted on OpenSense to actually do the right thing, then I could rely on your team to do that.
Yes, we have three different support contracts currently available that we offer to the CISO. Basic support for businesses who just want to have us set up things or migrate stuff. Our reseller support, people who want to resell their products with OpenSense. And we have support for integrators with branding and mass deployment and things like that. So, we offer a full range of support, which is also one of the way to fund the project.
Sure. And how does this scale? What kind of a horsepower do I need if I'm going to put this, say, on a, I don't know, 100 megabit internet connection?
100 megabit is easy. It's you don't need much performance if you have an old Pentium laying around and you can just install it on that. We have appliances running embedded hardware that we easily run a gigabit traffic through with a few gigabit of a gigahertz performance of CPU cores. So it doesn't need that much performance. You can do it with an old PC. You can install it on a VMware. You can install it on a cloud-based service. It's set up in no time, and it doesn't need that much. It's simple, and old hardware will just do fine.
What does FreeBSD bring to the picture that, say, a Linux kernel wouldn't?
From my standpoint, it's pretty easy. We come with from MonoWall, migrated to pfSense, migrated to OpenSense, and that's all BSD-based. Why is it BSD-based? I think there are two reasons to name for. One is stability. I think FreeBSD or BSD in general is more conservative, which has an issue with driver support. But also comes with clean migration paths, so it gives you a stable platform to work on for the security appliance, where things don't have to be that fast in terms of new things. Yeah, you don't need the development to go that fast. You do want new features, but you don't necessarily want to use all the latest and the greatest that's available. You want stability. That's the first thing that you need, and that's what BSD offers. And the second thing, it's on the open source part. If you want people to share your sources, then you should be able to give it away. You should be able to have a license model that enables others to use parts of your software or your software in full to develop new things and to work out new appliances, new applications. And that's what BSD is great for. Your license, it doesn't limit anyone in using your software. Which, in general, Linux doesn't either, but there are more complications, certainly, if you want to use it in a commercial way.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the reasons I prefer the BSD license, but because it's actually more free than the GPL, but this is not a day for a license war here. I've fought this fight many, many times on this show, so I don't want to bring that in again. But I do also want to talk about, because we are talking about network connections, how IPv6, is this ready for IPv6?
We have IPv6 in there. Most of the software runs IPv6. Since not many people use it yet, there certainly are going to be issues with it that we will work out as they come in. But yes, it supports IPv6. It supports IPv6 on DHCP level. It supports IPv6 on most or maybe all of the features that are in there. So you can migrate to that now, and then we'll probably have to help to fix some bugs later on.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, really keep saying, you know, V6 is around the corner. V6 is around the corner. But I know that most of the major ISPs, the consumer ISPs, do not offer IPv6 in the U.S. at least. And that's going to get more and more troublesome now that we've given out the last V4 address ever. I mean, we're going to have to recycle them now to get them back. That's why I was asked questions like this. One of the things I think happened since I talked about pfSense, that's 6-7 years ago. It looks like you've got more failover things. Like you can run multiple instances of this to get high availability. Is that something that was brought to the picture?
That's something that was in pfSense as well. What we have done is to improve that, but it was in pfSense, not in 2009, but later on it came into pfSense as well. But we have improved on those things. We have changed the XML part of the service that's in there to exchange messages between the two different boxes that you want to do the failover on. But also on the traffic shaping part, we have done things. We have a fully new implementation of the traffic shaper in there that doesn't make use of the old alt-q support that used to be in pfSense and still is in pfSense.
Yeah, okay. And so what's the one of the things I like about FreeBSD is there was three actual underlying firewall technologies. Is this using PF or is it using IPFW or what?
Yeah, well, there it becomes more difficult as some features are in PF and some features are in IPFW. What we have done is to make a clear separation of those features that we use. So all the filtering things like all the filtering things like rules that are in there are done with PF. And things like captive portal and traffic shaping are done with IPFW. So those two firewall functionalities are working together to give you the optimized performance. And IPFW, for instance, if you look at traffic shaping, that's done with Luigi's DummyNet feature, and mm-hmm. that works very well with IPFW. So it's a marriage that needs to be in there to support all those features that you can't do out of the box with either one of them.
You know, I'm still amazed that the FreeBSD can actually put those together and make sense of them. That's FreeBSD is just a remarkable technology. So it's why it's my favorite OS, because it's had all these crazy things it can do. I've been out of the loop a little bit on the FreeBSD 10 updates. Is PF going to change to the syntax that OpenBSD is using? Is that still not a possibility?
Currently I don't know exactly what's happening there on that front. I don't see much things changing. The OpenBSD syntax is more advanced. There are more features in there that we might want to use. I don't know. I don't know if there are movements to get more features of that into FreeBSD as well. We would certainly welcome it if that's a possibility. But I'm not in the loop to say.
Okay. Well, I was just checking just in case you had some visibility. I used to subscribe to the FreeBSD mailing list and also the PF mailing list in particular, but it's just too voluminous now. There's just too many things I want to try to read every day, and I can't keep track of all that. And I'm still on 9.x because I can't even get to 10 yet. So it's like, man, I'm just way behind. It's just horrible that way. We have a lot more questions to ask, but I have a very important announcement to make before we continue, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. Developers around the world have embraced their Braintree V.0 SDK as the easiest way to add secure mobile payments to their apps and websites. No matter what the payment type, Braintree accepts it. Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, even Bitcoin. And if something new pops up, Braintree will support that too. It's the same payment solution used by Uber, Airbnb, and GitHub, so you know it scales. It has simple, secure payments code that you can integrate in minutes. And if you don't have time to integrate it, give them a call and they'll even handle the integration for you and walk you through it. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients. SDKs in 7 languages: .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, Yay, PHP, Python, and Ruby. And it takes usually 10 lines of in-application code. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Integrating it into your app is as easy as inserting a few lines of code. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at BraintreePayments.com/floss. We appreciate Braintree's support of this show. So let's continue this discussion about the firewall. And so with the integration of PF and the integration of IPFW, and you get traffic shaping for that, do you need two different Wi-Fi antennas if you want to have a guest network and have a different shape than the primary one?
Well, no. Normally, you shouldn't need two Wi-Fi antennas. You can do that with multiple guest networks, and then set up the guest network for different zones. It depends on the network card that you use, the wireless card that you use, if you can have different SSIDs on that. But that it's not necessary to have multiple cards or multiple antennas for that.
So one of the things I was curious about was kind of the naming scheme that you guys have come up with. What made you think to go and use names like Brave Badger or the numbering scheme that you came up with for the releases?
Well, we looked at what the Linux guys did at Ubuntu, and kind of liked a good release schedule with set the times, making a roadmap, which actually is a roadmap and not a wish list, like setting a date and then say what you're going to do before that date. And if you can't make it, you can always roll over a little bit of those features, but at least set a deadline and work to that. And then if you have a major release, why not give it a name? Ubuntu does the same thing. It's easier to remember than a number. And certainly because we release so many times, almost every week, we have 15.1.1, we have 15.7.1, 15.7.2.3, 3.1, whatever. So many different numbers, it's difficult to know what version that you're on that actually does precisely what you want. So the major releases get a name. And when we started, we had a nice name to start with. And then we thought, well, if it doesn't succeed and if we can't get the community, we can always call it the Plunging Pelican in the next release. but then everything went as we wanted it to be. But we felt that there are lots of different forces moving against a project like this because we're new. And are we bringing the features that people want? Is it necessary to have a fork? Those questions. And then we said, well, we're making a statement with this release. We are going to say this is the Brave Badger. We are not going to stop. It will stay open. We will stay focused on what we want to achieve. And that's the goal is to get a great community project that is going to be one of the best and the most used, widely used open source security platforms. And well, we are in it for more than a year now, and if you look at the track record that we have, it's millions of lines of code that we already have done, made so many changes, migrated to a great new framework, and made a very stable product that's already in a lot of businesses running, and also at home users, providing the network support that they need. But the name scheme is. It's kind of fun as well. I think if you every time we before a new release, we sit together and then what are we going to use for the next release as a name? And it's kind of fun to do. So it's I think it's not only for the users; it's also for our own fun.
That's cool. Yeah. No. I mean, you definitely want to keep it fun and interesting for the people that are working on the project. So one of the things you mentioned was weekly releases. Can you speak a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, what we found out is that as soon as we started the project, that there are so many things changing in the last few years that are not incorporated into most open source security platforms within a timely fashion. And also, if you have bugs that you want to change, it takes most of the time it takes too long before people can actually use a released version. So they have to go to a development version, use that, run into other issues because it's a development version. And in a world where things like a heartbleed bug happens, in a world where software is evolving so fast And even FreeBSD is moving in a more rapid phase than I think it has done in the years before. If you look at how many people are working with it and how many different security threats there are, then you should be aware of that. And you should have a solid framework to be able to release whenever it's necessary. And that's, I think, is something we do. We don't release because we want to release. We release new software because there are actually new features or there are bugs that have been fixed. And I think 6 out of 10 releases have security fixes in it that for the security platform is important, I think. The number one feature for a security platform is it has to be secure. So I find it quite a bit strange that you would use a firewall and then don't find it important to have the latest security patch in there because you say, well, it doesn't affect me. Because do you actually know if it affects you? Do you read all those security statements? Do you read the advisories? Do you know why it is there? And are you absolutely certain that it doesn't apply to your situation? And that's why we are here. We try to get in everything that others bring up. And we try to make sure that you get those changes in the timely fashion and as best as we can and as fast as we can. And it doesn't cost you anything. So just press firmware upgrade, just upgrade. And we have made it so robust that you can even do it from your bed or from the couch and just press it on your phone and the system will run and it takes a few minutes and then you're done. So, and it even warns you if you need after an upgrade, you need a reboot, it will warn you before. So you can make the choice if you want to do it now or wait until you have a time frame that you can do it in a more organized manner.
So one of the things I was wondering about while you were talking about updates is for a lot of appliances, it basically takes that choice out of out of the user's hands and basically updates for them, like automatically and behind the scenes. Does OpenSense have that option, or does it always require user intervention?
For the time being, it does still rely on user intervention, and that's, I think, also because. If you look at firewall solutions, normally people do want to plan their upgrades. There are a lot of things that are dependent on that system. And if you would just run an update at the time that we have it planned or have it released, then you never know if anything happens. Even if it's not too major, it might ruin something that's behind the scene. And you don't want to have a network failure because of an upgrade. So we make it very robust, and maybe for security patches we might consider to do it differently in the future and give you an option to do it automatically. But at the time being, it's still something you have to do yourself. But as I said, you can do it very easily from a tablet or a mobile phone, or it's incredibly simple to do.
So where do you see the future of OpenSense going?
Well, I see a project that in less than a year from its first release almost has 1,000 followers on Twitter. We have 1,000 followers in the wiki. We have people working on it. And I think we can become one of the most important projects in the security business, let's say it that way. I think that the open source firewalls that are around either lack features or are built on a different basis, like the Linux firewalls that are around are great products, but they don't compare to OpenSense. So I think that's where we want to go. We want to be that number one open source project that you can use for all sorts of security threats that you want to mitigate, the risks you want to mitigate. And if you look at the future, then for 16.1, we have a new captive portal planned. We have a plugin system planned, so that makes it easier for people to get involved, to develop their own plugin. We will work on the legacy code that's still in there that we have inherited from pfSense to migrate it to our new model view controller-based framework. I think things like a REST API are also one of the things that we already have for our own parts that we have developed, and we make it available for others to use as well, so that you can work with something like Puppet to get it into your data center and to just central manage a lot of those firewalls in the field.
Do you ever see, do you see at some point right now, OpenSense is based on and using the FreeBSD kernel and kind of base operating system. Do you guys see a point in the future where you would deviate from it so much that you would basically be your own kernel and your own operating system, no longer relying on FreeBSD?
No, at the contrary. I think we are trying to get more closer aligned to FreeBSD to make sure that we can use all the great features of FreeBSD and the large project that's behind it, instead of applying our own patches. And I think if you look at that's one of the things that we did, is if you look at the pfSense project with over 70 patches on the kernel, that makes it... it's difficult to get that manageable. And I think that's also a basis of a lot of issues and a lot of bugs that are untraceable and only you have. So if that's the basis of your product, then you will also always be patching your own mistakes. Apply another patch on top of another patch, and you can't move with a normal frame time with the new releases of FreeBSD. So for instance, we didn't release that 10.2 based version of OpenSense yet, but we have it running in a development version, and that takes a day or less to migrate to such a version, because most of what we are doing is just standard, and that's also what we want. We want to have a standard system that you just can install OpenSense to, and we have already done most of that. So OpenSense is a package. It's a package on top of FreeBSD. You can just do a PKG install and install OpenSense. And now you still need some of our hooks for the ETC framework, and you need a kernel if you want to use all of the features. But our goal is to get more aligned to the FreeBSD project as we move ahead, and to be less dependent on patches and changes to the base system.
So I have a question about this. It sounds like it has a lot of moving parts. How do you test all this?
The thing that we do is, and that's I think what we saw with our before we made the fork, is that everything is glued together. So if you pull at one strain, you pull at everything at the same time. So what we believe in is that you need to have a separation of concerns, so that you can test one part without having influencing other parts of your system. All the different parts of the system that we make nowadays, and that's the traffic shaper, that's the captive portal, that are all those different bits and bolts that we already done, rely on separation of concerns. So we have a user interface which does nothing else than being a user interface. So it has input fields, it validates what you put in there. It doesn't do anything. So if you put apply or save, then it sends a backend call to a backend system. That backend system validates everything. And if it's validated, then okay, it writes a configuration file, and the configuration file is picked up by yet another process that controls all the services, which is a backend system that's also separated from all the different parts in the system. So we can test everything not at once, but in different parts, different small parts of the system. And that makes it possible to get control and to get grip of the new developments, and to make sure that if you have an issue with the system, that you can change one part without infecting all the other parts at once.
Is that all automated, or do you also have manual tests you have to do?
We have some automated testing in place. I'm not the expert on that. I think Franco knows a lot more about that. But we have some automated testing in place. We want to do more for that. And what we also did during the development is that the all the error messages get logged. And if you have users that have an issue and then a bug pops up, then you get a message and you can just send it in to us. And we get it in our mailbox and we see the issue and we can evaluate it. And if you put in your email address, we can even contact you and help you fix to get the problem fixed. So we depend on our own testing. We depend on a partly automated testing, and we depend on user feedback. That's basically how the system works.
And I appreciate your experience there trying to make sure the security patches come in quickly. What's your take on the Libre SSL situation?
But take, you mean the Libre SSL versus Open SSL, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the issue there is that if you look at Libre SSL, then they tend less to include a lot of features into a new release and more go with the security part of releasing. So it is more closely aligned to what we think you should do. That being said, if you look at Open SSL, then so many parties roll over their effort in the last few years after the Heartbleed bug that you kind of can ask yourself the question if Open SSL is still as bad as it was 2 years ago. I don't think so. I think that either way it's a good choice, but Open SSL less fits the same idea and the methodology that we use with OpenSense. We don't want to do a lot at the same time. We don't want to put in all those different features at once. We do want to make small steps and then gradually come up to a new release. And that's the same thing, I think, with Libre SSL. They don't pack all those features with a security patch. They just pack a security patch, and that makes it more believable, at least in my opinion, that what they are doing is more secure. But on the other hand, it's difficult to verify that. So I think it's up to you what you think is best. And that's the nice thing with OpenSense. We leave it up to you. We ship it with OpenSSL as a default, and you can just select of LibreSSL within the GUI, and then it gets applied, and everything works with LibreSSL. So.
And I know that you've mentioned a couple of times that I can just simply point my package command at your repository and install that. I've found over the years of playing with FreeBSD, though, that if I change any of the source options, I end up with a package that might be incompatible with the standard releases. So I end up, I have a Podrair set up that I can use it to build all my packages. Is that likely also going to be true if I just try to install OpenSense on my system?
If you have a running system with your own software in it and you append or change your repository to ours and you would install OpenSense, then we would take care of all the dependencies on our side, which might lead you up with software that doesn't work anymore on your end, because mm-hmm. that's not something we care about, to be honest. So I think at the moment because we need, when we have so many dependencies, it's a firewall, and there are so many different parts of it that need to be aligned correctly before it can actually work. If you look at the glue that's between the PF and IPFW, the order of things that have to be loaded into as a module on the right time, the settings that we need to do, the tweakings that we need to do to get everything aligned for the best performance that you need and expect from a security appliance point of view. If you use it on your desktop and you install OpenSense, you lose your desktop because that's probably not going to be compatible. But if you have a cloud-based setup and you need OpenSense to run there, but you can't just take our ISO and install it there, then you can just take a standard FreeBSD version 10.1, and then it's an easy migration to our changes, because then it's just install our package and we take care of the rest.
Does this install inside a jail, or can it?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I have not tried it. Sorry.
I've got the difficult questions coming up here. That's fine.
Oh,
that's
no,
fine.
Just shoot.
Sorry, go ahead.
I said just shoot. It's no problem. You can ask me anything. I don't know everything. That's maybe the issue here.
I did notice that one of the three core developers has the same last name as you. Is there a relationship there?
Yes, he's my brother. So that's okay. A very definite relationship there.
I would presume so, yes. What's it like working with your brother on an open source project?
Challenging sometimes, but he's very, very, very good in setting up things like framework. He knows to break up things into different parts and to organize them in such a way that makes sense if you look at it as a complete solution. It's sometimes difficult to follow. If you look at an MVC framework and you see it the first time, it's something that's it doesn't make sense to make things so complex from a basic standpoint if you just want to try and make a little piece of software. But if you have to work with that software and you have to make sure that it's good and you can make changes to it and you can keep it up and you can help people with their bugs and problems and then keep it maintainable that way, then you need something that's rigid, that's think through, that you thought through, it has so many different parts in it and others very good and setting up such a framework and get all those different parts in and align them in the right way. I think it's amazing and it's absolutely necessary for our project to work.
Okay, yep. Cool. I haven't actually talked too much about technologies. A lot of this is relying on upstream software, but how much of this is actually unique to the OpenSense project? How many lines of code do you think there is?
How many lines of code we have that are unique to the project?
Yes.
Oh, millions. I don't know how
okay.
many.
And what technologies, C, C++, what's the GUI written in?
The GUI itself, it's obviously it's HTML, it's JavaScripting, it uses Ajax calls. We have a PHP backend that's made with Falcon. It's a PHP framework that we use. We have a Python based backend that is responsible for kicking off all the configuration and services. So, and that's also one of the nice things that are in there, if I may. You can just kick off a service with that backend service. You can start it, stop it, list features from it. It can kick out some JSON data for the GUI, but it also can give it in a more human readable form for a CLI, for instance. So.
And so I can manage all this from something like Salt or what are the other ones like that? Chef, Puppet, that sort of thing?
Well, at the moment you can't because we didn't make the API available for usage to the outside. But from as of 16.1, we plan to do that and to make it available. And then all the features that we already have migrated, because you can imagine we didn't do everything at once. We take small steps, which tend to get larger because everything is tied up together. And we have to separate those different parts. But for the captive portal, for traffic shaping, and I'm sure so many different things are already in there. But those things are manageable that way, yes.
Cool. Hey, we're almost out of time, but one of the things I wanted to offer you the opportunity to do is to have invite people who have certain technology backgrounds to help you with your project. What are you missing the most right now?
Oh, I think user feedback is always welcome. We have a translation project, so if you want to help with translations and you speak a language different from, I think we have German in there, we have Japanese in there, we have Chinese in there, which we can certainly use some help, but it's already on its way. But if there's another language that you are a native speaker in, that and you can help us out, and that would be great. if you want to write plugins, then you're very welcome to help us out and write the greatest and the best plugins that you can think of. We can help coders. We can use coders, people that that can help us make the changes into the core system, help us fix bugs. I think on every part of our project, we can use the help. Okay. So if you think you can do something, just give us a call and get in and do your thing, because that's how it works.
What's the plugin interface like? Is it like Nagios, where you can write it in just a simple shell?
The plugin interface, it's based on the package system of FreeBSD. So you just have to create a package. It basically moves the files to the right location and set up some basics and makes a place in the menu system and things like that. So there is a description, I think, on the wiki available on how to do that. And if it's not, then we can certainly provide that.
Cool. And is there any other question that we haven't asked yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
I don't know.
It's always a stumping question. Don't feel bad if you can't answer that. Because every time I ask that, people go, I don't know. What haven't we talked about? But if you happen to have something that is still burning, we got to wrap up soon. So,
yeah, well, I think I don't think there are that many questions that we haven't spoken about, but I probably didn't answer all them in the right way. But which it's always difficult if you don't know what's coming. But I think what the nice thing would be, I would ask people just to look at it and take a look at the project and give their feedback. And I think one of the things that I didn't mention is that the Bootstrap GUI is a lot of people think that the Bootstrap GUI is just that's what we did. That's OpenSense. And I think I made clear that that's not OpenSense. OpenSense, the GUI we did for aesthetics, the GUI we did to make a difference between PFSense and OpenSense. But it's not what differentiates us from PFSense. I think what differentiates us from PFSense is the way we do coding. We have very clean code. We have a framework which makes it easier to migrate to different functions, to keep it alive, to have a project that's vital and that's easy to maintain. And obviously, the BSD license still is a hot topic, for at least for us. But for the end user, it probably doesn't really matter. If you just want to have a good firewall and you can grab either way, it doesn't really matter.
Sure, sure. Hey, I got two final questions I have to ask or my audience gets mad. What's your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor? Well, I think I would say just VI. I'm not getting around with Joe, so
okay.
I think if I open a file and the CLI, I usually do that with VI. So
kind of
old fashioned.
And what's your favorite scripting language?
I'm kind of good with bash scripting, but I rather have something like Python, which is more of a language. But if I do something with scripting, it's either bash or I go to real language.
Yeah, okay, fine. That's good. That's good. Well, hey, it's been great having you on, and I know we covered a lot of topics here today, and definitely I hope our audience will, in fact, look at OpenSense now that they have a sense of OpenSense. Oh, look what I did there. I was horrible. Anyway, so thank you, Joss, for coming on the show and talking to us about OpenSense.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to get on the show, and I hope a lot of people have looked at the show and will look into OpenSense as well. And thank you very much, and hopefully see you in the next couple of years again to talk more about OpenSense.
Wonderful, wonderful. That was Joss Chalivas talking to us about OpenSense. What do you think, Gareth?
It definitely sounds like an interesting project, and I definitely like their take on, a couple things. Like I like the fact that they are, there's a commercial company behind the project, but they're still remaining an open source project. And I also like the fact that they're building on the work that the FreeBSD is doing. Their take is they're an add-on on top of FreeBSD. They're not trying to completely replace the operating system as a whole. So I like that fact. It makes him right. I mean, one of the things I was curious about that unfortunately, like many things, didn't get a chance to ask was right now they're based on FreeBSD, but in the future, who knows? They could expand and support other operating systems. So the way that they're doing it makes it, I believe, them flexible and allows them to do that in the future.
Yeah, although they're pretty integrated into all the technologies there, so I imagine that would be somewhat difficult to do. But yeah, you never know. You never know. Anyway, so yeah, I would say it was good. I'm definitely going to check this out, as I always say at the end of every show. And I'm so embarrassed because I hardly ever check anything out anymore. But yeah, this looks good. I'm definitely going to spend a little bit more time on the website before I give it up today and see what else I can find out about that. So great. Anything else before we wrap up the show?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, great. So we've got some upcoming guests. Next week, in fact, we're going to have Casper Lund, who is one of the heads of the project for Dart, the programming language, which is one of my favorite new languages. I'm starting to use it for real production things coming up soon. And Dart has come a long way. We had Dart, I think, on about 3 years ago, and Seth Ladd, the community coordinator, was on. But it's gone a long way, including hitting 2.0 coming up pretty soon. So we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming changes and how Dart's actually progressed since then. Very timely show, because I'm giving a talk on my Dart talk that I gave at Fiesley. I'm going to give that actually this Thursday. So I'll be, unfortunately, that's out of order. I really wished I would have interviewed him before that, but that's okay. Caddy, high performance web server written in Go. Konoma, which is advanced JavaScript for the Internet of Things. Piwik, which is for web analytics. Think of Google Analytics, but all open source. Tuleap, which is an application lifecycle management. And my favorite newly scheduled show is Stephen Ressler, who I've been with on a couple of the Insight cruises. He's an engineer, mechanical engineer. And he has all these little wonderful foam models and spheres that he crushes and things like that. He builds entire suspension bridges in real, you know, showing actually how it works as part of the classes that we do on the cruises. But he has a simulator that does that. And he has a contest that high school kids can enter, where they build a bridge, a suspension bridge, and they send trucks over it, simulated trucks. And the job is to make it with the fewest parts. So it's a cost to every part that you have to have there. And wow, it's really amazing. So he and his brother are going to come on. His brother's actually the software engineer guy for this. But I hope he brings some of his foam things, because those are really fun to show. So that'll be a visual show. That's rounding out the year. Q4 is completely sold out. We'll be opening up Q1, I hope, this weekend, so I can bring in some new people, because there are about 4 or 5 people waiting for an open slot now. We have a live stream at 8 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. We take questions from there. You can go to the homepage for the show at twit.tv/floss, and you can see from there the spreadsheet of the upcoming guests. If you have a project that's not on that list, please email the project coordinator, the community coordinator, maybe the project leader, and have them email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. And if you don't remember that, that's actually on the homepage for this show. So you can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google+. I make announcements there about what's coming up and when we get new guests booked in. That automatically retweets to Floss Weekly as one word. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+, and that also retweets to Merlin, MERLYN. So you can follow me there as well. I have nothing to plug. I'm pretty much wrapping up for the year. I think we've got a couple cruises coming up in January and February, but that is about it. Gareth, I think you know something you might want to plug.
I'm pretty predictable. So yeah.
What is it?
I will plug Scale. So Scale is the Southern California Linux Expo. For those that don't know, it's taking place in January 21st through the 24th, 2016. And it's actually going to be in Pasadena, California this year. So it's going to be at the Pasadena Convention Center. So for fun-filled days of free and open source, hardware, software, everything. If anyone is interested in attending, you can use the promo code FLOSS. And receive a 50% discount on a full access price ticket to the entire show.
That's a deal. And I hope to be there either as a speaker or also as press covering them for Floss. So one way or another, I'll probably get in somehow. I'm already booked the hotel, so I hope I get in somehow. That's okay. It's all good. Anyway, Gareth, thanks for co-hosting today. I really appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks for having me. Always glad to do it.
All right. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.